AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
The music for Trauma Blondes is provided by Scott Benjamin Music. Welcome back to another episode of Trauma Blondes, everybody. I am Kristen Farrelly.
And I'm Megan Farrell.
Today is a little bit of a different beginning to our episode. We're going to dedicate today to my dad, who passed away in December on the 18th of pancreatic cancer. Today, we're dedicating it to him because yesterday was his funeral wake celebration of life. He had been cremated, so there was no formal wake or funeral. But it was tremendously difficult because there was the lack of support from my mom's family. My parents were divorced. It was a messy divorce. It was a nasty divorce. It was years and years and years of, you know, being caught in the middle of both. But my dad, Megan, as you know, was very much involved in the city of Somerville for his entire life, his entire career. So if it's okay with you, I'll tell just a little bit, you know, just a little kind of snippet about my dad's life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He, so the Boys and Girls Club, right? Everybody knows the Boys and Girls Club. It is a nationwide organization that serves the kids of pretty much every community that I'm aware of in most, you know, cities and towns. My dad started working at the Boys and Girls Club in Somerville, which at the time when he started was just the Boys Club. And I will never forget when he told this story, and I was already in my 20s. It was a black tie event fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club because that's what he did. He had to raise hundreds and thousands of dollars every year to keep Somerville going, because tons of kids, tons of staff, huge building, always made sure the kids had, you know, what they needed. And fundraising was something that was a part of it. So this was kind of cool. I got to go to, you know, a black tie event, wear a pretty dress and all the things. And I actually met one of the Celtics players, Jumpin' Joe. I don't actually remember him because I think he was like an older Celtics player, but it was really cool because, you know, he's a Celtics player and whatever. And my dad always tells stories. My father is known 100% to tell a story. But like, if you were at that one story, he's going to tell that story again. And if you're in the room again, you're like, oh God, I got to listen to it.
Over here we go again. Right.
Yeah. But it was always like, there was always like a funny spin to it. He never was really like super serious. So he gets up, he stands there and he does his spiel about donating to the Boys Club and all the things that everybody in that room was not going to leave without writing a check, because he probably wouldn't let you. So after he goes on his spiel and how much they need and what the event was, and he said that when he started the Boys Club back in, I think he started in 72, maybe, he was a counselor, I believe. And the Boys and Girls Club, the Boys Club at the time was very strict. You had to have an education. You were not just allowed to come in and, you know, you had to work your way up with an education included. So my father was in college at the time. had me, and then a couple of years later realized he couldn't bring his daughter to work because it was just the boys' club, and he didn't like that, and he felt like my kid should be able to come to work with me, especially on like bring your kid to work day, because that used to be a thing back in our time when we were
Right.
kids.
Right.
And he fought and fought and fought and fought and finally got it changed to the Boys and Girls Club. So when he tells that, he always says, my daughter is the girl in Boys and Girls Club. And if you look back at the this documentation that says, Somerville was one of the first to be the Boys and Girls Club and allow both and have both given the opportunity to thrive as kids. You weren't allowed to go as boys, and then where do the girls go? And then, oh, we're supposed to cheerlead and yada yada yada. But with the Boys and Girls Club, it was an opportunity for everybody. So he always used to tell that story at events. But when I heard it for the first time, I was like, wait a second, what? What do you mean? So to be that important to my father at that time, that he changed an organization's name so that his daughter could come to work with him, is it shows the type of man that he was.
Right, and it shows the type of, feelings and work ethic and emotions that he instilled in you, because now you see where you get that fighting edge from, where you get that edge to stick up for people that can't stick up for themselves, or giving people an opportunity that they might not get because of their situation or because of their background or their financial status and everything. So he instilled things into you before you even realized it.
100%. And then I, had the opportunity. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club. Oh, I think I turned 13 or 14, and I worked, I don't know. I mean, up until I was in my maybe late 20s, maybe 30, like, because, it was summer camp for the kids in the summer. And then it was after school. And so it was, I had an opportunity to be a part of that organization for so many years. And the fun trips that they used to do, they used to do their board meetings or their, so they would do their conferences, whether it was in Puerto Rico, and one time they had it in Orlando. So my father brought me and my grandmother to Disney, and it was awesome. I mean, he had to do the conference, during the day, and we had days off. He had days off, so we would, do all the things with him then. But to still be able to be a part of that and to be able to know people just as a teenager from all across the country, because sometimes when they came to Boston to do them, my father would, bring them all up to the Boys Club in Somerville, and I would see them. So at his celebration yesterday, there was so many people that came to it from other cities and other states that were Boys and Girls Club CEOs or executive directors or presidents. And it was amazing to see the show up for that he made such an impact on the Boys and Girls Club and the people that he worked with.
Right, and so many
That,
years later, too.
yeah, I mean, he hasn't been in the organization for quite some time. I mean, he retired and was living his life in Georgia, and but still always kept in contact with all the people that he had made friends with throughout the years being in that organization. And it was impressive to hear what people had to say about him and the stories. And all of the stories that people told were, Gary did everything for me. Gary was my best friend. Gary put himself aside for me when my wife was sick or my husband was sick, or every high school reunion party and planning and all the things that he was involved in, that he always put other people first and that they loved him for that. A lot of people didn't see, the other side of him that I saw. I got everything from him. I did. I got his stubbornness. I got his sense of humor. I got his nature of giving to people. I got that put others before yourself. But what I didn't realize until I was older is a lot of that came from need of his own. He didn't have a family that did that for him. It was all kind of a nasty situation, which I don't think I need to go into. It's not really something that, people need to know. But in the end, he was the person who always made everybody else feel like they were welcome and a part of a family. It was difficult for me yesterday because I had been estranged from my father for quite some time because of the two of us having identical personalities and the fighting between my mother and him was I couldn't, I gave up at one point and things were said and we got into a heated argument and I walked away and I didn't look back. I obviously, now that he is gone, regret that. I regret not seeing my dad and not talking to my dad. I did get to say goodbye to him before he passed away. But the reason I tell this story the way that I tell it is just because when my father was passing away, there was 3 days I was working 3 days in a row. And every single day I was texting his wife, how's he doing? And I would get his oxygen sats down or his respirations have slowed down and he's no longer opening his eyes, all while I had to work, all while I had patients to take care of. So yesterday I sent my mother a text and I said, there were a lot of people here asking for you and had said, oh wow, you look just like your mother. I can't believe it. And she didn't answer. She didn't answer. She could have cared less, it seemed. And my aunt had replied and said, oh my God, that's so and so. Oh, look at that. That's great. Oh, people are great. How's this one? How's that one? And I had said it was a wonderful tribute. The people who spoke about my dad spoke from the heart. And all of the bad things that my father did were gone because he's gone. And it was hard to take that and not feel sad because the pictures that were there of him and I, that when I was a kid, and it was so difficult. And my mother then said, I have no comment. And I just said, well, Mom, my father passed away. So a little support goes a long way. And she just said, no comment. So at that moment, I realized that this whole thing, I was going to go through this by myself. I have you, and obviously, how you're the one I call for everything. But it was something that I realized no one showed up to support me. So I think that's why I do what I do for nursing.
Yeah, we put ourselves in positions where it's kind of like a double-edged sword. We put ourselves in positions where we are able to take care of people and we want to do things that weren't able to be done for us, whether it's emotionally, physically, or anywhere in between. But I think it's also throwing ourselves into something so big and so important, like literally having people's lives in our hand, that it allows us to shut out the outside world. We can't focus on the ins and outs and taking care of patients and being there for people in ways that we want people to be there for us if we're focused on the shit that's going on in our outside world. So I think it's the two things that we do, why we chose the career that we did.
And I don't know that if my life was a little different, I would have done things differently. I would have probably not have been the mother that I am to my kids and not care about my kids as much as I do. But part of yesterday was his wife asked me to, if I wanted to speak, if I wanted to go up and say something. I said, of course. Not realizing that there were a lot of other people that were also going to do that. But when I was there, I realized that I was the only family member that stood up for my father, with the exception of his wife. And I really just went back to when I was a kid. That man, is back to when Cabbage Patch Dolls came out. He literally, I don't think we're going to be able to get it. It's so hard. People were looting, they were like destroying stores over a Cabbage Patch Doll. And my father just made sure I was prepared that yes, it was a great gift, and maybe someday we would be able to get it when it was, not so crazy. And I opened my Christmas gifts, and he said, oh, wait a second, I have one more. And Lo and behold, it was a Cabbage Patch Kid. And I remember the name because it was so stupid. Even when I was young, I'm like, Beatrix Potter. Why? It couldn't be like Stacy. You know, it had to be like Beatrix Potter. And that doll, man, did I was like beside myself. And he, the look on his face is only something that I understand now that I have kids. You
Right.
know, and I just remember it. That's the man that I remember. And that is the man that will forever be, you know, in my heart. It's not going to be the man that I fought with and the man that we, you know, head to head like two rams because I didn't want to be told what to do. And he was very much a person who told you what to do. So yesterday it was in incredibly hard. But my daughter's got to see, you know, the impact that he made on so many people's lives. And I think I'll forever be proud of that and proud to have been, you know, his daughter. But the next couple of days, I think at work, because he did pass away the week before Christmas. And now, 3 months later, the celebration of life, it's like you go through that, the healing process and the crying and the grieving and the anger and all the things. And then you finally smooth out a little bit. And then you have this, and it's, you have to go and you have to tuck it in, and you don't get to grieve while you're at work. So do does as nurses who have to deal with all this, does our grieving process get pushed aside? Yeah, I think a little bit.
Of course it does. It goes back to the whole when we deal with a loss or a death of a patient, it's not us desensitized or it's not us being numb. It's us literally pushing things down because that's the only choice that we have. There's five other patients in our assignment most of the time that's waiting for us to go do the next checklist item for them or to go bring them the turkey sandwich or their bottle of water they've been screaming about, but we have to bottle it down. And you having to deal with the loss and the space and the timeline that you did, it's going to the service yesterday was tearing a Band-Aid off, and having to reopen that wound and rehash that grief that the few days before Christmas between work and then having to put your smile on during the holidays for your children at home, we piecemeal our grief. And it's like, okay, I have a free couple hours now that I can put myself in my room and cry and grieve for my time that I had with my father and grieve for the time that for whatever reason I didn't have with him. And then you put it away to go through the holidays. And then now's the celebration of life. And I commend you for being able to choose to remember him and give him all the grace and all the credit for what he did for you in those good times and understanding that that's what you want to take with you. Because a lot of people, even like you said, in the messages you received from your mom and everything, that they're not able to understand that or understand that that's how you're dealing with the grief, that all of your times were not terrible with your dad, and you're gonna take the ones that you remember with Beatrix Potter and you being the girl in the summer of a Boys and Girls Club. Like it's something that's gonna help you process your grief no matter how long it takes you to get through it.
Right. And I think it makes it all the more difficult when the people who are supposed to protect you and be there for you and be the ones who show you the right way are the ones telling you that they're not going to support you. And as, you know, somebody now who's grown up and have my own family, my daughters and my son can make decisions that I may not agree with, but I will forever stand beside them. And if they ever fall, I will be there to pick them up, regardless. And, you know, if we fight or if we disagree or whatever, those three children in my life are the most important and proud of myself things that I have. I know they're not things, but they're, you know, your children are your proud moments,
Yeah.
three proud moments in my life that I have that I would never treat like that.
Right, they're your prized possessions, I guess you can call it. And you would never do that because you still see the impact that it has on you and making you feel the way that you do. And you never want to be able to be in control or in a position to have that power to make somebody that you're supposed to protect feel that way.
In this, I tried so hard to get, you know how I mean, I wrote, you read it, I wrote my little kind of tribute to my dad, and I didn't realize there were as many people. I stood up, she lived in the second row. I stood up and looked out, and I was like, oh my God, how? I can't. And I, you know, you try to kind of not look at people. And I started to read. And I saw every single person put their head down and my aunt with their eyes. And I'm like, oh God, I can't look at anybody because everybody's sobbing. And then it made me cry. And then I was trying not to cry. And then I kind of skipped lines and then I got lost and I had to sit there for a second. But then I, you know, you, it was like, my God. But it was just a very, very difficult. But almost at the same time, nice because I got to see so many people that I haven't seen in 20 years that I got to reconnect with too. So I got to see people that, you know, I grew up with, you know, a lot of the same circle of people that you know were there yesterday. So it was great to see people that I haven't seen. And unfortunately, you always seem to reconnect with somebody at a wake or a funeral or, you know, something that you don't want to reconnect. But that was.
Especially being from Somerville, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, that happens all too often in Somerville,
Right.
but it was yeah. So this episode will be for my dad, and you know, whether he can hear it or not, I'm sure he can. I got on my treadmill today and texted you right after, and it was the first thing I heard in the music was from the album, from George Winston's album, December. My father loved that album and would play it constantly. And it was one that I used for comfort as I got older. If I couldn't sleep or if I needed to think of my father, that's the album that I was my go-to. And I heard that this morning and I thought, okay, all right, Dad, I got you. Thanks for being here.
Right. It's like we're here and we hear you. And I mean, even now he's telling you, like, despite how things went in the end, like, that you guys are good and he's there for you. And no matter how alone you feel sometimes, he's got you still.
Yeah. And I think that that was his goal all along. But again, the two of us were two rams who just kept butting heads. But I tell this story today with you because I don't often let myself be vulnerable, only because from just you and I, our past of being vulnerable, it we're instantly that's used against us. And we are, it's almost like we just opened the door for you to punch us in the face so we don't show a vulnerable side of us. We just
Ever.
laugh and we joke.
Right. I literally I'm pulling it up so I can mention it to say that this is like how non-vulnerable we like to be. Let me see if I can find it. It was the thing that I posted on my social media story, and it says, like, I've stood toe to toe with a grown man who had rage in his eyes. When I tell you that I'm not scared of anything, trust me, I'm not. And that's how I hate to say it, but I portray myself as a tough kid because I don't want anybody to see me vulnerable because then that's when I get hurt.
And even at work, we use that at work. We do not show vulnerability and we don't show that we have feelings because we can't.
We can't because sometimes it's as simple as we can't because we don't have the time to, never mind the bandwidth emotionally or mentally or however you want to put it. But then it's just knowing that, okay, I'm vulnerable. This is real. I can get hurt. And unfortunately, both of us have dealt with the whole what this is going to go wrong, this is going to happen, what if this happens, what if that happens, and we do our best to tell each other, nope, what we're so proud of you for putting yourself out there, we're here for each other, and this isn't going to happen, this time it's going to be different, until like 3 days later we're like, yep, here it is again, like
Yeah.
fuck. You know?
Bend over.
Yeah, right.
No lube.
I
Here it
was gonna
comes.
say, oh, they left the lube at home.
Yep. It's true. But I think, again, I think that's why people like us do what we do, because we can tuck it in and we can help other people emotionally through things because we don't want to be left behind and we don't want to see them left behind.
And I think a lot of it is too, we kind of help people, or at least I can say for myself, is I like to be the fixer for people because then I'm like deflecting attention from me and the train wreck that I am sometimes, right? Like I think of even my ex-husband. I knew he wasn't perfect going into things, and I knew he had issues, or, not just him, some of a recent cast of my exes. It's like I go into things as a fixer and say, hey, nobody's perfect. We have this. And it's just that's who we are. And I think a lot of it is us not addressing the fact that we're deflecting away from ourselves too.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
The Crispy Coach. Are you ready to transform your health and fitness journey? Whether you're looking to shed just a few pounds, boost your energy, or just feel better in your own skin, it all starts with making just that small but really impactful change. Health and fitness just are not about looking great, it's about feeling great.
At TCC, we find a personalized routine that works for you. Not everybody comes in the same shape, size, or even motivation. We want to meet with you online. We'll do a free consultation. You tell us what you're looking for, and we'll work with that in every step of the way. We also have appointments that you can make if you just need a little pick-me-up and you need to just have somebody say, "It's okay, we got your back, let's start over." We have that for you at TCC. Head on over to thecrispycoach.com and schedule your free consultation. All right, so welcome back to this episode of Trauma Blondes. We are going to move forward from the topic that we were just on and the sadness of my dad's passing, but we are going to move into a letter that we received regarding some of the things that we had mentioned in the past about our insecurities as far as dating goes. So, Susan, thank you for sending in this email. We are very much appreciative. Susan was okay with us dropping her first name. She would prefer her last name not stay. But Susan writes, "Dear Megan and Kristen, thank you for talking about your relationships and how bad they are as nurses. I have been an ER nurse for 25 plus years in a level one trauma center and have recently divorced. My husband could never understand when I came home and spoke about codes. He could never understand when I spoke about any kind of trauma. He would then in turn say, 'Well, what if that happens to me? Oh my God, that could happen to me.' And it became about him. So I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for showing that this happens not just to you guys, but also to other people as well. I wish you all the best in your 20 seconds of Tinder, and hopefully I won't see you on there. Love always, Susan."
Oh, Susan.
Oh, Susan. Susan was okay with us saying she is on the complete opposite coast than what we are. So she at LA, I'm sure, in that area with a level one trauma center, and they're busy. They're crazy. They're just as crazy as we are here. So for her to write in and say that she had the same issue as far as not understanding us as, we come home with traumas and all the other things.
And I think scary just getting into the dating world again, right? Like I think about just getting out of a years-long relationship after my 7-year marriage, and The clock's ticking, my friends. And I look at all of the new grads, the exciting nurses that are coming in, that literally I'm old enough to be their mother. And this is where I start getting like scared talking about being vulnerable, is I know that clock ticking, not in terms of having kids, because we've already discussed how we feel about that. We're closed for business on that end. But it's more my is my clock ticking to meet somebody. And Susan, I don't you didn't share, how long you were married for or how long it's been since your divorce, but it's scary. Like I am terrified, and I will try not to cry right now, but it's one of those things that putting yourself out there is exhausting and so difficult to do. And it's like demoralizing sometimes, but you push yourself to do it because I know I don't want to be alone. And it's, then adding on the fact of like finding somebody that's okay with your situation, your kids, that meshes well with your lifestyle. 'Cause God damn it, I'm so sick of trying to change who I am for people. But, I throw myself out there because I know I can be alone. Like I can do this. I've been doing it long enough. And towards the end of my marriage, I was raising my kids by myself anyways, but like I don't want to do it anymore.
It is difficult, and people, I feel like the older we get, the less disrespect we will take. And as most people should, no one should be disrespected or treated badly or have to change for other people. It should just be a mutual, this is who you are, this is who I am. We mesh, we have the same things. Let's go out. But it's not that these days. It's ghosting and breadcrumbing and say what you want to say, and a lot of narcissism and things that we didn't have back in the day, Or we
No.
did, and they were we just tucked those into.
Well, it's that, and it's like, you try and say all the right things of this is what I'm looking for. I'm dating with intent and for a purpose, and I don't have the time to date five or six people at once, n nor have I run into that problem anyways of having to get to that point. But I don't have the capacity or the bandwidth, and it's hard enough to find time in my schedule to go on one date. And you put all your eggs in one basket, even though you don't want to. And it's like, okay, 2 to 3 dates, if you even get that far, to realize that person just was basically talking the dog off the meat truck of what you wanted to hear. And it's like so super frustrating.
So for the 20 seconds of Tinder update, this is probably legitimately going to be 20 seconds because I really just don't have much more room for any more disappointment. We had spoke about Dive Bar and how great he was and seemed and genuine and all the things, right? The love bombing again. And it turns out I had said to him, "Hey, I keep seeing all these pictures, but I've yet to see you're not in any of them. Why are you sending me, this picture of this and that and whatever?" And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then sent me like five or six and said, "I'm really sorry, but I gained weight since the picture on Tinder because I'm just never on there. I never updated it." Well, wait a second. You were on there because yes, you liked me or hearted me or whatever it is on Tinder. And I was disappointed. I was very disappointed, not because of his weight, but because of the fact that it was deceptive from the very beginning. The picture was from I don't know how long ago. It didn't look anything like him now. And he said like 20 or 30 pounds that he had gained, and it was more like 75. It was a lot. And being someone like me who's healthy and active, and I eat well, and I make sure that I exercise, I very much focus on my health. This wouldn't have been a match from the beginning, not because of weight, but because of lack of self-care. So it ended up, he said, "I'm sorry, I should have told you in the beginning." I said, "Well, what was going to happen when we met? You think that I wasn't going to say, who the fuck are you? You are not the same person that I saw," because the instant attraction maybe wouldn't have been there. Of course not. And he has to understand that. And it's not that I'm superficial or I think only about looks, but let's be real. You are attracted to somebody based on their looks in the beginning.
Oh,
You know nothing about them.
you're 100% accurate, because it's like, how many times do you swipe that it's like, I'm hitting no, and it's to no fault of anyone's own. It's, if I don't find you attractive, I'm not going to read your bio. I'm just going to click no. I didn't feel anything when I saw your picture, so we're not going to go forward.
Which is, they're doing it to us. So, me saying that out loud is exactly what the other side is doing as well. So, they can pretend that that's not happening, but that most certainly is happening. Like, that's clearly the reason why we don't have 427,000 likes. We have 1,200. There's a big difference. There's huge difference. So, it's a two-sided, it's a two-way street. So, that is my 20 seconds of Tinder, which probably turned into 2 minutes because I can never shut up. But that was my update. And then Megan, we'll talk about any updates that you have now.
I don't really have any good, bad, or ugly updates. I will say, like, I was like chatting back and forth with two guys, and it was, I don't know, one of them, the attraction factor was there, but it was more, I don't know. I think it was there because there was no butterflies, but it was more like, hey, this person seemed interesting. Like, maybe I'll see what they're about. And then it just fizzled off. And there was another gentleman that, again, I feel like it was in the same category, but something just wasn't, grasping my attention. And maybe it's just the funk I'm in that I'm forcing myself, like I said earlier, to check in on the dating apps to just keep my promise to myself of just putting myself back out there. But, what I will give this one other guy credit for is he did try to, a couple times initiate like meeting up or going on a date. And I was like, oh, my schedule's very busy, which is not a lie. It is. My kids play so many sports. But I could tell it was going nowhere just because I didn't follow through with it. Like, I didn't try to make the effort, which is fine. And I was upfront with him about that, like, hey, I'll see what I can do. But kudos to this guy, and I'll leave it at this for, I guess, as positive of a 20 seconds of Tinder as you can get without a good outcome, is his communication was amazing. He texted me one day and was just like, hey, I want you to know that I went out with somebody else on a date last week, and I'm gonna move forward and try to pursue that with them. Best of luck to you in your adventures. And you know what? I said, hey, happy to hear that for you. Good luck to you as well. And just left it. And kudos to him for the communication, not being like, hey, you stupid bitch. Like, you never pulled the trigger and met up with me. So I kept on trucking, but it was just a, hey, maybe he was another good guy I let go or whatever. But for whatever reason, he wasn't the right one for me at the time. And I wish him all the luck.
But that is a stand-up guy, though. For him to just say, "Listen, I'm sorry," instead of just not responding to you anymore or just never ever reaching out to you anymore. It's just nice to see that or hear that somebody, is capable of actually doing that.
Right. It gives you hope for the next time you're on swiping.
Which I think after the last, couple people that I've interacted with, one of my friends at work says to me, "Yeah, you're not having a lot of luck there, kid." I'm like, "Yep, nope, not even a little bit." So I think I may take a little bit of a break. Maybe I'll swipe a little bit, but I don't know. I feel like it's not really, the dating scene is not great. There's not a lot of options for people, and I think too many expectations. Too many high expectations, expecting a woman not to swear or have a career or be able to change a tire. Thanks, Dad. But I think I need a little break.
Right. And I think that's where I'm flip-flopping right now is I'm seeing that I'm like, hey, why don't you log in and see what's going on here? But I'm not hyper focused on it. But again, comes that fear of, well, if you're not out looking for somebody, there's more of the chance that you're going to be alone forever. So it's not a good place for me to be swiping right now because it's not intentional versus in a panic, and I have to be very mindful and take my time doing it so I don't put myself back a couple years and put myself in a position where I'm settling for any attention, good or bad, is better than none at all, because I also don't want to backtrack into that space either.
Yep, absolutely. We do have another letter to read, which actually kind of gets into a topic that you dealt with recently. And this is a letter from Becky. She is an ER nurse as well. And she sent an email and it says, "Dear Kristen and Megan," which I should probably just automatically assume at the very beginning, I could probably go without saying that. But she goes on to say, "Thank you for reading my email. You can use my first name, it's Becky, but I want to keep my last name confidential because of the stuff I'm about to say. I recently encountered a very traumatic pediatric code. For the rest of the day, my brain could not function. I was in a fog and my heart was broken. The child came in, yes, granted, with a few underlying health conditions, but was only 2 years old. We did everything that we could for over an hour, and ultimately, they did not survive. What people don't understand is the pain that we suffer every time something like this happens, and we don't have an outlet. I didn't have an outlet. I don't have a boyfriend. I have friends, but most of them are all in healthcare and were there that day. How do you feel as nurses we're supposed to cope? And what do either of you do when you have a code like that?"
Oh, Becky,
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that you went through that. It's something that I'd like to say doesn't stay with you forever, but it doesn't, as I'm sure that you know. I think it's important, and it's a terrible spot for you to be in that all of your friends not only are in healthcare, which is helpful, but we're there with you. So it's, leaning on each other when we're all hurt already. I think in the situations that I'm in is I'm lucky that I guess if we're lucky at all, Kristen, that we work in separate facilities now that I can call you, text you, whatever, because I know that you're working the same 12-hour shift sometimes. But I know that, you weren't there with me, but you know what it's like to go through. So I do have a couple friends like that that are outside of my facility and nurses that I can even just shoot a text to because, you don't have the time to make the phone call. I come home to my kids and like that's, trying to be as normal and as there for them. And, you still have to leave work and drive one to soccer or one to, wherever they're going. But also paying your respects to the child you lost and acknowledging the hurt and the emptiness that a lot of people are going to feel. But, just being there and I think recognizing that this was a huge loss and it's harder than the 93-year-old full code patient that you lose, that you have to have that time that you take and you reflect to yourself and whether it's Kristen runs on the treadmill, or I go out with my dog for a walk, or love kickboxing. You do something like that to process. I don't know about you, Kristen.
Yeah, so sometimes I think processing it is not easy. You have to look at the parents and then you instantly think of your own kids. How would I deal with it if it was my child that was here and I had to watch them go through what we did to try to save them? And the shock on their face and the not accepting of what is happening and having to be the person to take your hands off of the child. I did have one, God, years ago at this point, but that will forever stick with me. And I would not stop doing CPR. I could not take my hands, my thumbs off. And one of my coworkers said, "Kristen, move." And I just looked at her and I said, "Get the fuck off me." And it wasn't because I was mad at her. It was because I could not stop. I have young kids at home and I could not stop. I did not want this kid to die. And ultimately, they did. And processing it probably took me a year. I mean, it sat with me for a year. Anytime there would be an ambulance call that they were bringing in a baby, it was like, "Oh God, please no, please no, please no. I can't do it again. I can't do it again." And after, your third or fourth or fifth or sixth pediatric code, it doesn't go away. Those are the ones that don't go away. Those are the ones you do not walk out of that room with a dry eye. So I don't know that anybody ever really copes with it. I think we just know that we did our best in that. Those parents know that we did our best. And that's, I think, what is important at the very end of the day.
So,
So,
yeah, that was something that I'm glad that you brought that point up is, it was kind of eye-opening to me when I came into the ER to see, because you see like the TV shows that you think are like real life, right? But it's like, when you actually see that when you're coding a patient, the family's not standing outside or in the waiting room or whatever. They're actually there in the room watching you. And it's, people who are not in healthcare don't understand that. Like, how could they watch that? How can they be there? How could you let them in the room? And it's when you are in there experiencing it and you say from a different perspective, hey, this is giving this family member closure because they're literally seeing us sweating, exhausted, doing everything we can because then they won't live with that question down the line upon all the other grief that they have to deal with already. On top of how could this happen, they don't have the question of did they do their best or did they do everything because they physically see with their own eyeballs that we've exhausted not only all options, but ourselves in doing it. And it's hard enough for the families of the older people to process, but you add in that additional trauma to the healthcare team when it's the parents going through their stages of grief, the anger, the rage, the sadness, the denial, the parents screaming, like, no, this can't be it. This isn't it. I'm not going to let them stop. I'll do this myself if I have to. And then just the shrieks of their screams in the reality of this is it that you have to listen to in your mind over and over again, that that's what's so hard. And I think that that's what makes us process these types of patients even longer.
Right. Agreed. And so I really do wish you the best in coping with your recent loss and hope in the future that you will be able to lean on your coworkers and even the friends and family that you have that don't understand. It's okay to reach out to them and just tell them how you feel because sometimes they may just be the open ear that you need, not the advice. Because they don't have advice. And that's okay.
Right. Yep. And you don't have to go into gory details with them. I had a loss today that's really impacting me, and I just need somebody to sit here with me, or I just need somebody to talk on the phone with so I don't have to be alone with my thoughts. But also, Becky, what you need to remember is the Crispy Coach. We have that support group for a reason, and for people who might not have the network around them or close to them, reach out and, join a group of like-minded, like professionals that can be there for each other and just can unfortunately sometimes commiserate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always there for everybody. And it's just a matter of reaching out if you need one that's, not listed on the website. Did you know that TCC offers a frontline workers support group? I bet you didn't. TCC will always offer a free frontline workers support group. You can come in completely anonymous. You can come in with your face, with your name, however you feel comfortable. But just knowing that others of like mind and career are all here to support each other. Head on over to thecrispycoach.com and click on Frontline Workers Support Group and see if one fits for you. We have had quite a tearjerker of an episode. So, you got anything good to say?
Yeah, we can finish off on a joke. So, what do you call a reverse exorcism? Wait. My mother's
Good.
gonna fucking kill me.
Oh,
When Satan's telling the priest to get out of the child.
huh. Hail Mary, full of grace. All right, why do priests? Why do priests perform baptisms?
Oh God, why?
So they can wash their toys.
See everybody, it all comes back to the we dealing with trauma with the inappropriate dark humor.
Right, and of course it's Sunday, so why not? Also, oh, Megan, what? I got the Dubai donut, remember?
That's right.
Oh,
So
first of all,
I
you
lived
need
a little vicariously because, oh,
you
because
also
Liv,
got
yeah, Liv got the Dubai chocolate cup with strawberries at the mall. And but
yeah.
talk about your donut.
Girl, first of all, it was at Union Square Donuts, which I am in no way, shape, or form making money off of. But let me tell you, if you get a chance to go to Union Square Donuts, they have a bunch of locations. The one I went to was in Assembly, not actually Union Square. It was in Assembly Square. But oh my God, first of all, not only did we buy the last three to buy because I was like, I just give me the three of them. We got a couple other ones. So we got the Boston cream because, of course, Nick is a huge fan of Boston cream. So I haven't tried that. We got that for him. Evelyn got some sort of like brown sugar butter. And then what the hell else did we get? I don't know. We got another one. But let me tell you what, I don't eat donuts. I mean, I'll take a little like nugget because it just satisfies my sweet tooth. I'm embarrassed at how much I could detach my jaw to fit that donut in my mouth. And how am I still single? I'm just kidding. Sorry, Dad.
but really.
Yeah. So it was so good. I mean, like, so the girls and I ate it. Now, we had left because my dad's celebration of life was at the Row Hotel. And then, of course, the Mount Vernon, because every graduation, christening, death, like baby shower, wedding shower that this entire city of Somerville has ever fucking gone to was at the Mount Vernon.
All
So,
yeah, that all the mercy meals.
oh my God, yeah. So we were leaving the Row, and I'm like, you guys, oh my God, and my kids don't know Somerville. They don't know the good stuff. So I was like, oh, we gotta go in and get a donuts. You want a donut? And they were like, okay. So we walked in, and I was like, they have to buy chocolate.
It's
So
like,
the girl was
ah.
it's like a little, and now, of course I was like, I know my father did that because I've been bitching about it for freaking months that I can't find it. So we got those, and the three of us, we pulled into the Mount Vernon parking lot, which, by the way, pulling a fucking Tahoe into that thing was like took some skill. So we sat in my truck like three little piglets, and we ate that donut. And let me tell you what, it was amazing. It was everything everybody talks about.
One thing that actually met the reviews.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was bigger than I thought it was going to be. So it but I do have two more, so I think I might have, now that I'm talking about it, I think I might have to have a little peace after this. Maybe my little sugar rush.
Satisfy it.
Yeah. And then of course it's in Somerville, so it's not like I'm going to go down there anytime soon, but one of the comments that someone had made on a TikTok page was that there is one in Pheasant Lane. Isn't that where you got the
Yeah.
one for live?
Yep.
All right, so that's at least a little bit closer. In this parking.
Yeah, room for the Tahoe for sure.
Oh, I was telling my kids that they don't get, so even still after this many years of not living in Somerville, I always am like, is that parking? Like, yeah, dude, you're in New Hampshire. There's parking everywhere. No, is there parking where we're going? Because you just get used to it for your entire life. You know, is there parking? Where do you park? Because everything was in Somerville was like you there is no parking.
Yeah, like I didn't have my own car until I left Somerville for that exact reason.
Yeah, because it's just you got nothing, you know? Or you get the, I mean, how many people, and if you're not from Somerville, this may not be something that you understand. Or I shouldn't say Somerville, but like Boston, Somerville, we used to throw beach chairs, brooms, boxes. You didn't shovel a spot and some asshole was going to pull in it. You fucking left your stuff there. And that was like, you know, a dog pissing on its property. You knew, oh, that's Helen's broom. I know it. And you didn't park there because Helen cleaned her spot out this morning.
Right, even driving through anything, like whether it was a different city or whatever, if there was a cone they stole from down the street's construction or whatever,
Yep.
it was just the courtesy that you knew that somebody busted their ass to do that, so.
Yep. And hell hath no fury. If somebody took your spot and moved whatever it is you put there, oh God.
Their cat would be buried in the snow that I
Like,
shoveled my ass off. I'm gonna shovel it again on top of their car.
yep, legit. Good luck, buddy. You're not getting out now. Or I get like the person in front of them would like right up to their bumper, and then the person behind them, like, you're not getting out. Ugh, I miss some of them.
Those were the days.
Yeah. Now you can listen. When I was driving down there, I'm like, you guys, it didn't, this is not, I mean, we didn't have bike lanes.
They
You
have
didn't,
bus
this,
lanes, Kristen. They have fucking
dude,
bus lanes.
I
What the
know.
fuck is that?
I know. And there's more bike lane than there is like car lane. So how the fuck am I supposed to get, there's no bikes, but then if a bike comes, you're fucked because you're gonna take them out. I didn't know whether I was supposed to stay in the middle to the right. I was supposed to try to squeeze my truck into like the bike lane. Is it a bus lane? I don't know what's happening. Like, isn't there just a lane for fucking driving? When did that all change? And you can't go around the rotary and ball square. Oh my God. That was not happening either.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah. Oh, and if you're a Somerville person, or you're like a transplant and you're like, I'm from Somerville and you want to go to an amazing bar with amazing food, please go down to the pub.
Yep.
It is owned by somebody that we grew up with. And it is, dude, you got to go. You just got to go. You got to get the steak tips or the buffalo wings. They're always notorious for that. And they are so good.
Always a good time at the pub.
Oh, man. Yep. We are lucky that when we were growing up that this was not, we didn't put everything on social media on the nights at the pub.
Yeah,
So,
correct.
AKA the Powder House Pub, which we always called the pub, so now is just called the pub. Thank God Franny changed that name to the pub. So on a much lighter note than we started with today, Megan, I wish you the best. We wish you health, happiness, and again, if you have any time that you need to have the support group, just reach out to us at thecrispycoach.com and we will 100% get a group going for you.
And as we were able to dedicate this episode to your dad, everyone take time to remember and reflect on good memories of somebody that you've lost that's, near and dear to you.
Absolutely. And if you want to send us some pictures, 100% please do. If you want to send us some baby pictures, I'm actually going to put some pictures up today, I think, on TikTok, make a little just dedication to my dad. I did recently put a dedication page on the Crispy Coach. So if you want to see some amazingly adorable pictures of me when I was sweet and innocent with my dad, they are on the Crispy Coach website. And Megan, we're going to get some of yours as well. I hate to tell you, but I'm not going to be the only one young on those.
I'll be sure to find you pictures of my Cabbage Patch Kid. Her name was Emily, though.
Beatrix Potter. I wish I had a picture somewhere that I'm sure my dad's wife has some pictures. I can try to see if I can get a picture of Beatrix Potter because she was it. So thank you everybody for listening today, and thank you for kind of standing by us and standing by me today while I was able to just kind of talk about my dad for a little bit. Needed to vent and get a little bit of that out, and I appreciate you listening. And we cannot wait to bring you a new episode in the next 2 weeks or so. Until then, stay safe, stay happy. We love you guys.
Take care.
This episode and all episodes, we credit Scott Benjamin for the music.